This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Vayomer Elokim, and God said, Tavshei Haaretz Deshe, let the earth give forth grass, Esev Mazriya Zera, grass that is able to give forth its own seed, Eitz Pri Oseh Pri Lemino, fruit trees that can make fruit of its own kind, Asher Zaro Bo Al Haaretz, which contains its own seed above the land, Vayehi Chen, and it was so. So we're talking about two types of vegetation. Vegetable, which is a vegetation where the seed is below the ground level, and a tree where the seed is above the ground level. That's the difference between the two brachas that we make. We make a borei pri ha'adama for the one kind of vegetation, and a borei pri ha'etz for the other kind of vegetation. The definition I've given you is not quite the halachic definition of for what you make the bracha, but it's the conceptual distinction between a tree and grass. V'atotzei ha'aretz deshe esev mazviya zera lemineu, and the earth gave forth grass able to produce seed for of its own kind, v'etzoseh pri asher zaro bo lemineu, and trees that could produce fruit which contained its seed according to its kind. Vayar Elokim ki tov, and God saw that it was good. Vayehi erev, vayehi boker, yom shlishi, and it was evening, it was morning, and it was the third day. There are many things that we can deal with in these few psukim. We're only going to deal with one concept, and then next time we'll carry on further. What is the most glaring question on these psukim? I'll give you a bit of a hint. What is being created in these psukim? Vegetation. What's the difference between vegetation and everything that's been created previously? In other words, what's the difference between plants? To reproduce. The difference that we now come onto the second class of bria of creation. The first class is mineral. The second class is vegetable. From vegetable onwards, the object has the ability to recreate itself. What is an important element here in the recreative process that's mentioned in this psukim? According to its species. Right, now tell me what the glaring question is.
The second part, it doesn't say that the fruit tree, the fruit after its kind, and it's the seed after its kind.
Okay, but that means the same. It's a fruit which contains seed according to its kind. So the fruit is according to its kind.
Why its kind?
Why it must be to its kind only. Okay, that's the one question. A more textual question. So? What's wrong with that? That Rashi we're not going to go into. You're right, that Rashi we're not going to go into.
Why do you think there are two kinds of growth? I mean,
what's the difference? Okay, what else? A textual question. Why is it coming from the earth? Where else do you expect seeds to come from?
Why should it come from
the earth? It can't just stop growing in the middle of the earth. Vegetation grows in the earth.
And
why it grows in the earth? It's not such a dumb question. It's actually quite a basic thing that you're asking.
Why does it say Vayehi Chen and then it says
Vayehi Chen? Okay, it's a bit repetitious, but that's not the main question.
Why is there a mention of trees that do not produce fruit? animated trees that produce fruit?
That's a good question, but what we say there is that all trees produce fruit, but not all the fruit is edible. A pine cone is also fruit, in a sense, except we don't eat it. But when we talk about tree, here we're talking about the seeds of a tree.
What
about?
The second part is what in itself of the kind. The first part is
third yielding seed of this kind. Yeah, that is a difference, you're right, that is a difference, but that's not the essential point. Not quite, you're on the grass side, you're on the right track. Okay, those are two slightly different words with different meanings. Look at the psukim carefully. What is the commandment given to grass? What does grass have to do? Just has to be capable of reproduction. And the tree? Okay, capable of reproduction, but what else? Let me know. Right? It has to be capable of its own reproduction only. By grass it doesn't say that. What does it say in Pasuk 12? And the earth gave forth grass capable of reproducing its seed, leminehu, according to its own kind. Who said the seed has to do it? Are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
The instruction was given the trees are restricted to reproducing themselves according to their own kind, but not grass. And in fact what happened was that grass also restricted when the grass grew. It restricted itself to reproducing its own kind. Let's look at the Rashi on Pasuk 12. Vatotzei ha'aretz, asks Rashi, afapi shelone emar leminehu b'desha'in b'tzivuyehen. Even though, says Rashi, it does not instruct the grasses to grow only leminehu, only according to their kinds. Nevertheless, shamu shenitztavu ha'ilanot halkach. The grass heard that the trees were commanded so, that their reproduction had to be restricted according to their own kind. What does this mean, this restriction?
Crossbreeding.
It means that crossbreeding can't take place. Right? It's not an injunction, but it's a fact that crossbreeding can't take place. So you'll say that crossbreeding can take place, so what's the answer to that?
Not
by itself, but that's the important thing. But over here we have the scientific law laid down that a crossbreed, although it can take place, can't reproduce itself. Now that instruction was given only to the trees, it wasn't given to the grass. In other words, according to God's instruction, the grass should have been capable of crossbreeding and continued regeneration of the new breed. Is that what a hybrid is called? When you cross two different things. Nevertheless, the grass heard that the trees were commanded that they were to restrict themselves to reproducing only themselves. V'nasu kal v'chomer ba'atzman, and they made a kal v'chomer. Ki demefarish ba'agada b'shchitat chulin, as it's explained in the Gemara in Chulin. That's the Rashi. Let's try and understand the Rashi a little bit clearer. What is the kal v'chomer? Kal v'chomer means when you learn an obvious fact from a less obvious one. Right, so if I say it might rain just now, you better wear a raincoat, then you can make a kal v'chomer that if it's already pouring, you certainly have to wear a raincoat. Right? So there's something inherent in the grass that makes the grass feel that the limitation of leminehu applies more to grass than to trees. What is that element? Ron, you should have a Gemara with Rashi. Is that not a Chumash with Rashi? Is that not a Chumash with Rashi in front of you? That's a tikkun. That's a pity. You should have the Rashi in front of you. What is the reason that the grass considers itself to be more applicable to the restriction of leminehu? Very simple, says the Gemara, who explains Rashi on the Gemara. Trees have branches. That means there is an inherent mechitza, there's an inherent division between one tree and the next. Trees can't grow too close to one another. Grass can grow too close to one another. Can grow very close to one another. So if God found it necessary to tell trees even though they naturally grow far from one another. Nevertheless, God found it necessary to say, Leminehu, said the grass, how much more so do we have to be careful that we come out each blade of grass as a separate entity and not to be confused with the one next to it. That's what the Gemara says. On this whole question of the grass being able to hear and being able to talk and all this kind of thing, that's another subject which we might or might not have a bit of time to go into. But let's just understand the concept. The concept is that there is something which is so inherent in the Bria, something which is so a part of the creation, that the grass didn't have to be instructed to come out that way. It was clear that the grass had no option but to grow in a way which limited them, leminehu, that they could only reproduce themselves according to their own types, and that they had to keep each species of grass separately. That each blade of grass, as it came out, you can just see the sort of barren earth as it was at this stage. The dry land had just formed, and now you see the grass beginning to grow. Each different type of grass grew at that time. There's no kind of grass that we have today which didn't exist at that time, but each one came out separately. There was no mixture. You didn't just see one mass of grass. You could distinguish each blade of grass differently according to the different types of the different species of grass, although they weren't instructed to do it that way. Now, in order to understand this concept a little bit more clearly, we've got to do a Ramban, and this Ramban is not even on Bereshis, the Ramban is in Vayikra. We're going to be short on copies, so you only have a Bereshis here. Mm-hmm. This one is a misprint. Pasuk. On this Pasuk in Vayikra, chapter 19, verse 19, we have a machloket, a dispute between Rashi and the Ramban. The Pasuk says, Et chukotai tishmoru, you must observe my chukot. A chok is normally translated as being a law, a din that doesn't have an obvious explanation. Rashi says on this Pasuk, what is an example of chukotai tishmoru? It's the law that you are not allowed to crossbreed animals, that you're not allowed to grow vines and wheat together, and so on. Says the Ramban, those aren't chukot. I mean, that's not if you want to translate a chuk as something which is without rationale, then those dinim, says the Ramban, are not without rationale. Says the Ramban, there's only one din, only one law in the Torah which is totally beyond human rationale, and that's the law of shatnes, that you're not allowed to wear linen and wool woven in the same garment or sewn together. That's the only law for which we don't know the explanation at all. But for everything else there's an explanation. What is a chok, says the Ramban? A chok is a law which doesn't seem to be designed for orderly living. The law that you mustn't murder, we understand, that's designed for orderly living. The law of keeping Shabbat even, we understand the benefits that accrue directly to us as a result of keeping Shabbat. But there are laws which have very good reasons for them, yet they don't benefit us directly. They don't seem to be designed for our benefit. They seem to be designed for some higher purpose. That's what a chok is. And the Ramban now proceeds to explain the reasoning for the prohibition of interbreeding of animals and plants and everything else. I want to start, that you'll see on the right hand column where it says Yud Tet, but we want to start about seven lines below that. The Hatam Bekilayim, at the beginning of the line, the Hatam Bekilayim, and the reason for Kilayim. Have you got that? Follow it word for word, even if you can't read very much and understand very much. Slowly over the months, as we do more and more of this kind of thing, you'll suddenly start realizing that you can learn a Ramban. V'hata'am bekilayim, and the reason for kilayim, kilayim is now the prohibition of planting vines and wheat together. Ki Hashem bara haminim ba'olam b'chol ba'alei ha'nefashot, because God created different species in the world. You have the essence of apartheid here, and have to listen to this very carefully. Have you thought of this? Yeah, this is where the whole thing, what the whole thing revolves around. It will be a very interesting conclusion. And the reason is that Hashem created species in the world in all the different types of Baalei Nefashot, right? All the different owners of souls. Now, not only people have souls, but everything has souls. Bitzemachim, right? Everything from plant life onwards has a soul. Bitzemachim, in vegetation. Uvevaalei Nefesh, and with animal Hatnua, and with animals, in other words, things that can move, and certainly in human beings too. Venatan Bahem Koach Hatolada, and he gave them the potential of reproduction. Sheyitkaimu haminim bahem la'ad kol zman sheyirtzeh, that those species can continue to exist forever as long as the Ribono Shelom wants. That's he programmed the world so as to allow it to continue to reproduce until he decides to interfere and to stop it. In other words, things are happening automatically. Reproduction is taking place unless God chooses to step in and hold it back. As long as he, may he be blessed, desires the existence of the world. So it's something inborn into nature that vegetation and animals and people can recreate and can procreate. V'tziva bekocham, and he commanded to that ability, to that potential, sheyotziyu leminehem, that procreation should be restricted to producing fruits of its own kind. V'lo yishtanu la'ad le'olam, and that should never ever be changed. Shenemar bekulam leminehu, because in all these cases in Bereshit it uses the word leminehu. So here we see in the Ramban already the pshat, the meaning of the use of the word leminehu in our sentence in Bereshit. It means restricted to reproducing your own species. V'hu sibat hamishkav shenabia behem odzu imzu lekiyum haminim, and this is the reason for which we are expected to breed animals with one another to keep the species going, right? So there's a mitzvah in being a zookeeper and in a game reserve and in things like this, looking after wildlife and the preservation of wildlife is a mitzvah in the Torah. This is not something which is just somebody's hobby. This is something which humanity is expected to participate in, to take the steps which are necessary to preserve all species forever and ever. And it's aveira when things die out because of human carelessness. It's really carelessness, and we're responsible for it, because that wasn't the intention. God's intention was that things should always continue. So we should breed animals in the same way, kashe yavo ha'anashim al anoshim l'piryei v'rivyei, in the same way as human beings, men and women, associate with one another for the purpose of procreation. That's not the only purpose for which they associate with one another, but that's an important purpose. V'hamarkiv shnei minim, and a person who blends, who breeds, interbreeds two different types, Meshaneh u'makchish b'maaseh bereshis. He does two things. He's Meshaneh, he is changing, and he's Makchish, he's denying the maaseh bereshis, the creation of bereshis. Why? That he's changing it, alright, but what way is he denying it? Ke'ilu yachshov shelo yishlim HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'olamo kol hatzorech. It's as if he is implying that God didn't do the job completely, and he wants to help in the creation of the world to add new species. That's what's wrong with it. We're not permitted to imply that the Bria was imperfect. Vahaminim bevaalei chayim, now on the top line of the next column, vahaminim bevaalei chayim, and the different species among the animals, lo yolidu min b'she'ena mina. Interbreeding can't occur. V'gam akrovim b'teva sheyivaldu mehem, and even those that are closely related, and interbreeding where the two parties to the interbreeding are closely related, where a birth can take place, kagon apradim, for example, mules, yikaret zaram kihem lo yolidu. Their seed is cut off because they in turn can't reproduce. So you're really doing two things wrong. You're changing and denying Maaseh Bereshis, and you're causing a species to be cut off. Because if this was allowed uninhibitedly, then people would be doing a tremendous amount of this interbreeding of animals to try and develop the perfect species, and they would develop a whole generation of sterile animals. And that we're not permitted to do. And also plants which are grafted one type with another type, their fruit cannot afterwards grow. What's the position with a grapefruit? Can one grow a grapefruit tree? Does anybody know?
I think there are many orange trees also that you can't grow.
Yeah,
most citruses all grow grafted.
But you can take a slip of an orange tree and you can plant it and it will grow.
If it's an original species, but not if...
Not if it's a grafted species, is that so? That's what he says here. V'yiyubi isuram shnei tamim an iskorim, and they are in this prohibition, are the two reasons aforementioned. V'zeh tam sadcha lo tizrak kilayim, this is also the reason for not planting your field, wheat and vines together. Shehu b'har kaval dat rabotenu, because our rabbis consider that already a type of grafting. The asar af kilei zroim, and even seeds aren't allowed in that way. Neshi yishtanu b'tivam, gam b'tziratim b'yotim yonki mizem mizem. So he goes on. Just up to there anymore. The main objection in the Ramban is that you are changing and denying Maaseh Bereishis, the creation of God. You're implying, firstly, you're creating a species which he didn't create, and secondly, you are implying that the creation was not complete and was not perfect. The Maharal Prague asks a very strong question on the Ramban. He asks the following question. One of the greatest mitzvahs we have is the completion of the act of creation. It's part of our belief that the creation wasn't perfect. That's the concept of a bris, for example. That man completes the act of creation, that a human being is not born complete, at least men aren't born complete, that we have to finish the act of creation. The Gemara says it's like that with many things. Wheat, you can't eat wheat as it grows. You have to take it and you have to thresh it and you have to winnow it and you have to grind it and you have to mill it and you have to bake it. Look at all the work that has to go to turn the wheat into bread before it becomes usable to the human being. It's of quite no use until it's turned into flour and ultimately into bread. It can't be eaten, it can't be used at all. Why? Says the Gemara, because that is one of the ways that the human being participates in the act of creation. That God created the world to a point from which the human being was able to take over. He gave us the raw material we need, and he said, now you do the rest. Says the Maharal Prague. So you see, in fact, it's a very great part of the creation that it was not created complete, and that the job was left for us. So what's wrong if God has given us the raw material in the different species and he's left the blending to us? What's wrong with that? That's the Maharal's question. I want you to tell me the answer. If you were to look at it by examining the text of the Ramban, the answer lies in a word of the Ramban. In one word of the Ramban that we learned is the answer to the Maharal's question.
Mishaneh.
Yes. Mishaneh with the Bris Mila also. And with changing wheat into flour, into bread. Well, you say you should eat wheat. In fact, if you're turning it into bread, if God wanted you to eat bread, he would have created bread. Okay, that's what I'm both with the Maharal says here too.
You're not changing that sauce.
It's not a sauce. You're close. What?
Creation is defined as being something out of nothing.
Right.
Man starts off, he's not carrying on a creation. He's transforming an existing thing into a different thing.
Okay, when made into breed, he's also not creating because he's taking potential. He's taking something in potential. You know, we've decided already that creation stopped on the first day.
He's not completing the creation.
Well, then here he's also not completing.
So that's why I'm asking the
question. Okay, so let's not use the word create. In other words, what the Maharal is saying is whatever is wrong with this should also be wrong with baking a loaf of bread or doing a bris milah. If you want to call it creation or completing or blending, whatever you want to call it. There's one word, I just want to know the word in the Ramban. We'll use that, we'll come to that too. But at the moment I want one word in the Ramban. No?
Could you take
you either call it soil or
no.
Yeah.
No. No.
With the
there is something of that later on in the Ramban. We haven't done it yet. There is something of that. No. Soon, by process of elimination, we'll get to it. The last word on the first column. Lahosif, to add. Quantitative additions we're not allowed to do. And here you have the definition of the purpose and function of mankind in the Bria, in the universe. We're here to add quality, not to add quantity. That's it. Whatever quantity there is ever meant to be in the creation, God gave it during the 7 days of creation. That's it. We're not here to increase quantity, we're here to increase quality. That's the important thing.
Surely if you take two animals and make one out of them, split it in either two, you do quality, not quantity.
But you're making a new species. Right? You're making a species that didn't exist before. Lahosif bo briot. You're creating a new species which wasn't created before. Discovery you're allowed to do. You're allowed to discover hidden things, yes. But to create something new, you can't. You can, but you may not. Right? We'll discuss this in detail in a moment.
They're now growing hybrid wheat, and the wheat is now producing much more seeds, much more seed. So you are increasing quantity.
So?
You said we want to increase quantity.
You're not even allowed to.
The new hybrids are producing on the one stalk has no grain.
That's okay, but you're not producing a new species. Right, that's really the quantity of species. No, that's really quality. You're producing a better grain or whatever it is. It's produced because the fact that it's producing more shows that it's a better thing. I mean, that's really it's the same. It's wheat, if you're talking about wheat or whatever it is. It's wheat, and it's instead of having 2 grains on the stalk of wheat, you've got 50 grains on the stalk of wheat or whatever it is. So it's a better wheat. So there, you really by increasing the grains, you're increasing the quality of the wheat. Where it comes to increasing quantity is when you make something that wasn't there before. But there you're making a new species. That implies that God's creation was incomplete. Yeah. That means, 1 second, you're giving it something which it didn't have before. That means you're implying that there was something missing from God's previous creation. If you complete the quality of the creation, then all you're implying is that the quality was not complete. You're right. God specifically didn't make the quality complete. That's what he left us to do. And that's what the whole Torah is all about. We find in here, and this on the third day, the whole function of the Torah, the purpose of the Torah, the purpose of man. That's to keep leminehu. We'll discuss it in a moment in a little bit more detail, but to increase quality.
What does one differentiate, how does one differentiate between species? Because they say breed cows and bison, or some type of bison.
That probably isn't allowed according to Halakha.
So then, and cows and cows, how does one differentiate?
Cow and a cow is all right. A cow and a bison is not.
Long-haired cows and cows.
As long as it's not a different, a different breed, a completely different that has different characteristics, not just external characteristics, but functions in a different way. The biologists have to work out what is considered different families, different genetic families.
You're not to use the respect of being able to reproduce as your proof, as if. Offspring can reproduce, then it's an allowable mixture.
Could be. I'm not sure. One would have to check and look. That could be one of the indicators. Let's just have a look at the method one uses to improve quality. Actually very interesting. Sorry?
Improving quantity of
their
species.
No. If you've got a rose bush, how do you improve the quality of the rose bush? Prune it, you decrease the quantity. That's an incredible chiddush. How do you improve if you've got an ore in the ground, you've got gold ore in the ground, how do you improve it? By cutting out the rubbish. By having less and less and less. Until you come to the kernel, until you come to the really essential part in the middle. How do we prepare the examples that the Maharal himself gave? A bris milah. which is the example par excellence of what we're meant to do with the Bria, with the creation. We remove a part of it, not add. Everybody always asks if the meaning of a bris is to complete the creation, why didn't God give us something to add? Why did he tell us to take something off? That seems to imply, in fact, that the creation is complete and we're taking away. If he wants us to contribute in the creation, he should have given us something to add to the child. No. A quantitative addition you do by adding. A qualitative addition you do by subtracting. By cutting down. And that's a lesson which unfortunately we're very hesitant to learn. You've got it in all the examples that the Maharal gives. How do you prepare grain? Take the wheat. How do you make flour out of that? You get rid of the stalks and you get rid of the husk. And we call this the purifying process. And we're told, in fact, that the mitzvah that the Torah was given, letzaref bohen es habrios, to purify ourselves with. The method of Torah purification is a cut down on quantity, not an addition of quantity. You might remember, those of you who were here for Rabbi Miller's talk, where he gave the example of the relationship between quality and quantity. He gave the example from Tanakh. Who was it with? With the 300,000 and with the 30,000 and 300? With Gidon, where he wanted to go to war, and he started with 30,000 people, and God said that's too many, and he cut it down, and he cut it down, and he cut it down, and eventually he had 300, I think, in the end. And Rabbi Miller asked, okay, so he had 300 tzaddikim in the end, and God said, right, with these 300 you can go and you'll win the war. So what was the problem in going with the 30,000? Included in that 30,000 was the 300. What do you lose? So you've got your 300 and you've got an extra 20, whatever it is. You've got your quality and you've got your quantity. So Rabbi Miller said no. Quantity can in fact decrease from quality. Your 300 people can be ineffectual when there are another 20,000 people around as well. Your rose bush, it doesn't get bigger, it doesn't get better as it gets bigger. It gets worse as it gets bigger. It only has a certain essential ability and a certain essential strength. And the more that strength has to feed, the more you dilute that strength and the less quality you're left with. You have to have the courage to cut it down sharply to enable it to flower into full strength and into full beauty. And here too, the isur here is to be moisif, to add onto the bria, to stick something onto the bria, onto the creation which wasn't there before. That you're not allowed to do. To cut back, to purify, that you're allowed to do. In fact, that's what we've got to do. The concept applies to things that one does oneself also, in the sense that every human being has certain potential and certain abilities, and he's got to know that what he's got to achieve is quality. And sure, most of us are underloaded quantity wise, but sometimes it's necessary to cut things out so as to see that what you're doing properly. You have to cut certain activities out. There comes a time when you say, I can't go out tomorrow night, I've got work to do, or I can't do this or can't do that. One has to have the courage to prune one's activities, to understand that what remains, what one's doing properly. There's no Torah attractiveness and there's no Torah value in doing a lot badly, learning a lot badly, doing a lot of mitzvahs badly, being nice to a lot of people badly. There's no value in that whatever. The whole thing is quality, 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 quality. And sure, one tries to then increase the quantity. You want a big rose bush that is strong. You don't want a little rose bush that is strong. But sometimes to get it strong first, it has to be small. And then from its strength, it grows bigger. And then sometimes you have to cut it down again and let it grow bigger again. And so the thing grows. One can't let a thing grow wild. It has to be tamed. It has to be cut back, cut back, cut back all the time. And someone has to understand with one's... anything one indulges in, anything one involves oneself in. If one's merely adding, you're getting nowhere. That's nothing. Rather cut down on the quantity, but make sure that what you're left with there is quality. Then you're performing the function for which you were created. To take the raw material of the world and to understand it better and to learn it better and to relate to it better, that's what we're here for. To make more of it, we don't need that. It's also, one sees, in the concept of procreation. It's all very well, I always say, one should have big families and big families and big families, but it has to be big families that are good. One doesn't fulfill one's obligation by having big families and letting the kids run around wild. one has to raise one's kid, and one has to raise one's kids, and one has to produce children of quality. And that's the purpose, and the whole thing is to develop a finer and a finer quality.
So what happens if you've got a family, if you've got people that are known not to be capable parents?
Then you must prohibit them from having children. Absolutely.
Okay.
Don't quote me on that, because people will tell all sorts of things. To have children that you can raise to be Yerei Shemayim, but to have children that you're raising to be all sorts of funny things, no mitzvah at all. It's a mitzvah to have children that are going to contribute to the world, not to have children that are going to run wild. There's no question about it.
That story about the king who wanted children
was
a
sword
that they were
going to
kill the prophet. No way.
Yeah, that was something far in the future which was beyond his control. It wasn't that he couldn't raise his children properly, but he was afraid, he was unable to raise his children. What he was told is, you do your job, raise them as best you can. If despite your trying your best and you're raising them as best you can, they choose to run wild, there's nothing you can do about that after a while. But the parent has to be capable and has to understand that his obligation only starts with the birth of the child, not with the conceiving of the child.
I didn't
have
three.
So how come what? Lubavitch doesn't hold that one.
No, I mean,
absolutely, the parent is incapable of raising their children, and that has to be.
Does the parent have to request mate of their own child, or is it the responsibility?
And you can't get sterilizing people because they're not able to raise their children. You know.
But it's the responsibility of the community if they see.
In the case where there's something seriously wrong with a couple, yes, it is the responsibility of the community to try and do something to help them. But normally it's a question of the parents asking a child if they can't. But money is not a reason for not being able to raise children. It doesn't cost money to raise children, like mentioned. It just takes a bit of intelligence and a bit of dedication. So money's got nothing to do with it. But and even normal ability, any normal person can raise 12, 15, 20 kids to be fine human beings if they put in the time and the effort. If you can raise one, you can raise 20. But if kind of when you've got psychological problems and hassles where the parent themselves are just unable to do it, they want us to step in and help. And now one understands the Rashi that we just learnt. The grasses understood the essentialness of the commandment of Leminehu from the fact that it was even given to trees. The trees which have a natural distance from one another are still warned, be careful to keep even further from one another, don't interbreed. How much more so, say the grasses, do we have to be careful not to interbreed. One gets from this, apart from many things, one gets a picture of the importance of every little thing. God doesn't want two blades of grass to interbreed. Who notices it? Who cares? Two blades of grass? Doesn't matter. Not allowed. God takes steps in the Bria, God takes steps in the act of creation to prevent such a thing from occurring. Things which we take for granted, the grass that we stamp on and walk on and don't even look at, for the Ribbono Shel Olam, each blade of grass is very special and each blade of grass has a part to play. And here we come to the second part of the Ramban. On the second column, about 8 lines from the top, and there are some of our friends, Mosif Betama Kilayim, who give an additional reason for the prohibition of Kilayim, Ki hu shelo la'arbev ha-kochot ha-megadlim ha-tzmachim li'yot yonkim zeh mizeh. So as not to mix up the powers that give rise to the growth of plants to feed one from another. You'll understand it in a moment. Mashi Amru Bivreshis Rabo, as the Medrash says, this is a very famous Medrash, Omar Rabbi Simon, said Rabbi Simon, Ein lecho kol esev ve'esev milamata. There is not a single blade of grass down here, she'ein lo mazal barakia, that doesn't have a counterpart in heaven, umakeoto, and it hits it, v'omer lo gadel, and it tells it to grow. Do you understand what this is? Now this comes in, now this is a bit of the mystical side of the metaphysical side of this understanding of this prohibition. And this is based on our shiur 2 weeks ago. Remember that everything is split into two. There is the physical down at the bottom, and there's the spiritual counterpart. Says the Ramban, quoting from this Medrash, that even a blade of grass has its spiritual counterpart, has its equivalent up there, which is the whole power. Remember our example with the trains. We just see the little trains going around, the little lights that go on and off. That's the blade of grass that we see. But behind each blade of grass is a huge machinery that goes on to get this blade of grass to grow, to keep it to grow, to look after it, to watch it. There's a whole interrelationship of things up in heaven, so to say, in the spiritual world, that are interrelating to keep things going down here. And each time that little blade of grass moves, something's happening up there. And as the blade of grass grows, there's growth occurring up there. And the Medrash says there isn't a blade of grass whose growth is not directed by a spiritual counterpart. In that case, says the Ramban, can you imagine what you're doing now by mixing species? Now you're interfering with God's world altogether. You're interfering with the metaphysical world. You're interfering with the spiritual world, and that we're not allowed to do at all. The principle that I want to extract from here is a principle which we mentioned this last Motzei Shabbat, and that is, why are Jews and non-Jews not allowed to intermarry? Two different species. That's it. You see from here the principle right in the Torah that the Jew is considered already a different species. And intermarriage between Jew and non-Jew is not just to preserve the race and all that kind of thing. These are two different species. I said on Motzei Shabbos there is the concept of conversion, which we're not going into. It's a whole different concept, that it is possible to move, in this case, from one species to the other. But the principle here is that the Jew and the Gentile are not two types of the same species. These are two different species altogether. Now comes the question of black and white people, different species. Well, there's nowhere in the Torah that says that black people can't marry white people and white people can't marry black people. The only thing is, what there is in the Torah is the concept which Abraham says to Eliezer when Eliezer wants his daughter to marry Abraham's son. What does Abraham say? He says, "You are an Arur, you are cursed." He says to his trusted servant Eliezer, "You are cursed and my son is blessed. And a cursed and a blessed can't join together." So we see another two kinds of species. So we've got Jew and Gentile are two kinds of species. And now we have another kind of two kinds of species. An Eved, a slave, an Arur, someone who was cursed by the curse of Ham. Right? Ham was the son who was cursed with permanent, everlasting slavery. Abraham says that can never happen. That an Arur and a Baruch, but a cursed and a blessed can marry. That's also the interbreeding of two different species that can't occur. One doesn't know whether the black people fall into that or they don't, but the only justification you could have then for banning marriage between blacks and whites would be to say that the blacks, in fact, that the black race are descendants of Ham. You would have to have some kind of basis for that and some kind of proof for that to say such a thing. But if that would be the case, and by the way they behave in their independent states, I think that it's not very difficult to say that. The moment you grant them independence, they go and they buy themselves a new master, and they get themselves a Russia or a China or a someone. They don't seem to be able to manage on their own. They don't enjoy independence. If there's any truth in that theory, then yes, there would be a Torah prohibition for black and whites to intermarry.
Would it be possible for a black to
convert? Then it wouldn't be. Then it would be, if you could prove that the black race, there are many black races, if you could prove that a particular black race is a descendant of Ham, it wouldn't be right then for a black person to convert.
Is there such a shame? What happens then with the black Jews that are
Ham? There are not many black Jews.
No, but they are Ham.
Yeah, because we don't have any proof to say that they are the children of Ham. It's a speculation. If somebody could prove them, there would be a big question as to whether they could convert or not. The concept that emerges here also is the interrelationship of different species. And that is, what is harmony? When you press two keys on the piano, you don't make one vibration. It's two vibrations. The resultant chord is harmonious. And that's the principle of interpersonal relationships according to the Torah. Don't try and make two species one species. Let each species operate on its own, and there has to be derech eretz, there has to be kovod, there has to be honor in the interrelationship between the two species. No matter what you'll say, even if you'll want to say that the black people are cursed, and you want to say that the black people are the children of Ham, and therefore that they're not allowed to intermarry with whites, and therefore that there's a certain justification for apartheid, even if you want to go as far as that, there is no question of the derech eretz, of the kovod that one has to show for a black person. as a white person, is created by God, is made in the image of God. So that although there can be prohibitions of an interlocking of the species, the laws of respect for one another among the species, even for inanimate things, one isn't allowed to destroy a fruit tree. One isn't allowed to destroy anything for no purpose. You can't waste. Derech Eretz, that's covered for the thing as well. God created it, you don't destroy it. So there is a concept over here that while the union of two different species is prohibited, the interrelationship between different species is encouraged. And the only dinim which are prohibited in interrelationship are those dinim which might lead to union. So we don't drink wine with non-Jews. Why? Because where there's wine, there are other things. The Ramban says a little bit further that part of the prohibition of plowing together with an ox and a donkey together, part of the prohibition is that where you plow with an ox and a donkey together, you usually only have one barn for them, or one place for them to live, and it brings you to interbreed and it brings them to interbreed, and that's not good. You should keep your cattle separately. Yeah, but it's against the spirit of the whole prohibition a little bit. You can, as long as they don't. According to some, it is. According to some, even drinking tea is. According to some, anything which is a social drink. There is a view. It's questionable as to whether we pass on that way, but there is a view that any sociable drink, one doesn't. And there's a view that you don't go into a bar to drink. Okay, so you drink with whiskey or whatever it is, but this way we in fact really pass them, but you don't go into a drinking place to drink with non-Jews and things like that, so that one has to understand the spirit of the law is one of discouraging interrelationship in areas which could easily lead to union. That we don't allow, but interrelationship of respect, interrelationship of trust, interrelationship of cooperation and working together, that we have, but not union, not two species creating one species. What's the exception to that? Male and female, also two species. What's the answer to that? Yeah, male and female are two species. Pardon? Yeah, but it's better than that still. We're going to learn a little bit further on that initially God created man and woman as one. That actually man and woman are not two species, they are two halves of the same species. They're as different as two species, if not more different, but they're really one species cut in half. It's only when the coming together of man and woman that you have the species fulfilled, or male and female. Is a bull the member of the species, or is a cow the member of the species? A cow and a bull together is where you have the species in its fulfillment. And a male and a female together is where you have the species in its fulfillment together. And we're going to do that a little bit further on in the Chumash when we come to the creation of man. Difficult to know. Probably not. Probably it's two species. In fact, almost definitely it's two species. It seems that they were created in two species, because Adam already looks at the difference between. Right. I don't have a wife.
So the law of not destroying anything, if one plants flowers or vegetables or fruit from trees, is it obligatory to always make sure that some of those will produce seed? In other words, that
no.
The entire amount should be.
I'll say if one's farming or something, there might be such an I don't know about an obligation, but almost a sort of a moral obligation that. Unless the seed is in danger, unless the species is in danger of extinction, I don't think there's actually a halachic obligation to do anything like that. But there are a number of mitzvahs in the Torah which the Rambam explains as being based on preservation of the species. But one has to be concerned about in the same way as we're concerned about not intermingling the species, we have to be concerned about the preservation of the species.
What is the actual difference between the two and the
meant you at the Shiran and Saturday night?
Yeah.
Oh. So explained.
Is the Jew in essence different, or is the fact that he has the Torah different, and the fact that he can practice it make him different?
No, he evolved into a different being.
Because you find, I mean, when Arabs and Jews aren't really different.
They're worse. A Jew without the Torah, this is the big chiddush of the whole thing. When a vegetable ceases to be a vegetable, it smells a little bit, but it's not that bad. Right? When an animal ceases to be an animal, it stinks. When a human being ceases to be a human being, he stinks even worse than an animal. When a Jew ceases to be a Jew, he loses everything. The reason we don't see it around here is very simple. Because in South Africa, if a Jew ceases to be a Jew, he remains a South African. And so, as being a South African, there's certain moral laws. It's the same as everybody else. Where one sees it really is, unfortunately, in Israel. There you see what happens to a Jew who loses his Torah. And that, Chazal say, that's lower than animal. An animal has a certain way of self-respect and a way of behaving in a way that it's not offensive. No, an animal is never offensive.
So what about concepts like Jewish compassion and Jewish kindness and that kind of thing? Just Jews in general, not religious Jews.
What every Jew has in the bottom of his heart. What every Jew has. In the neshama there's something. But that can become very degenerate. It can be covered up with a lot of rubbish.
You consider the Bria to be a perfection but incomplete.
It's quantitatively complete but not qualitatively complete. It's complete in potential but not in actual. We are here to take the potential and to make that into actual. So everything around us we have to look at in that sense of taking it and improving it qualitatively. How do we do that? Both by physically improving it qualitatively and also by its utilization, the way we use things is the way we improve them.
What is a woman supposed to do to be complete?
Even instead of a bris. That's one of the reasons she has less mitzvah. She is born much more complete than a man. A woman has to do less, has to work on herself less than a man does in order to complete herself. A woman has certain natural refinement which a man doesn't have. A man by nature is wild, discourteous, arrogant, and a bit of a boor. A woman by nature is sensitive, refined, and quite noble. A man has to refine himself, and a woman is basically born refined. She gets spoiled. That's why it's much easier to raise girls than to raise boys. That's why we do it the way we're doing it. You just have to leave them alone. Just give them a good environment and leave them alone, and they raise themselves. A boy, you actually have to educate. That's a lot harder.
You said if you just have a sea recreation, you can start directly after the sea recreation.
Yeah, because of this is the chazal that the Ramban has just brought. The correlation between the mazal, the thing on top, and the esef.
I was thinking about the difference of machloket of subdivision.
Also partly that. Yes, certainly that we said in fact last time. That until there was machloket, you couldn't have procreation. Yeah, absolutely. There couldn't be another step before the machloket. That we said last time.
Let's say that a Jew and a non-Jew are two different species. Let's say the product of mixing two species is that the offspring can't reproduce. How is it that children of intermarriages can reproduce?
It's a very good question. They can reproduce, but not the spiritual qualities. If the woman is a Jewess, then even there are certain spiritual qualities which are continued. In other words, one has to view it a lot more carefully in order to understand the nature of the different species.
So again, when we're looking at physical, actual, never mind the other half and spiritual, the actual physical thing down here won't reproduce.
Same as we said on Saturday night, that the bodies of a Jew and a non-Jew are not different. There's nothing genetically different about a Jew and a non-Jew, and that's not where the difference of the species lie. For example, if we mentioned that the, how can I put it, each species differs from the other one sometimes in one point. But that one point changes the whole quality of that whole species. Alright? The biologists have quite a difficult time drawing the line between animal and plant. Right? Is it the ability to move? Then an amoeba is an animal. Is it the whole thing? There are a couple of species in between the two, which there's quite a lot of machlokes among the biologists as to whether it's plant or animal, in fact. Right, it can sometimes be one minute little thing which changes the species from one grade to the other. The thing which changes a Gentile to Jew is a spiritual quality, not a physical quality. If you examine the bodies, they're the same. There's no difference between a Jewish brain and a non-Jewish brain, or between a Jewish heart and a non-Jewish heart. They're all the same. From that point of view, it's purely a spiritual concept, and therefore the harm of interbreeding will express itself in a spiritual area. All the other species differentiate themselves on a physical basis, and therefore the consequence of interbreeding expresses itself in a physical basis. On a physical basis, but on the case of a Jew, will be spiritually sterile, unless there's conversion.
So man originally came from Adam, from one man, but all the animals are originally all different. But,
well, we don't know. We've talked from a physical point of view, we've accepted the possibility of evolution. So all the animals might also have come from one source. So the Jew is a further evolution, in a sense, to the point of becoming a different species, but becoming a different species only in a spiritual sense, not in a physical sense.
But again, then, the change would only be on a spiritual level, because Adam would have been, yes, would have been a man all the time.
Yes, only a spiritual level, definitely.
Why are we allowed to eat hybrid fruit,
simply
to encourage
your production,
because even though it might be
produced by Golem or
whatever.
Because there's no Isser in, once it's there, there's no Isser in relating to it and using it. Isser isn't doing it. It's not trace, there's nothing wrong with it.
Encouraging the production.
But who's the man who's done wrong? The man who's put it together is the one who's implied that there wasn't enough in the breed. We'll do that when we come to the Psukim in Vayikra. We'll do it in detail.